All right, happy new year and welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton with your first show of 2019, brought to you by our friends at Bill Curry Ford. And we've got a fun one today. Lots of things I got to get to. Of course, we have the end of the season itself, which I'm not going to go game by game over what happened. We'll take a look back at 2018 in all of its glory. We've got the whole coaching thing. Dirk Cutter officially was fired after we did our show last week and after the game on Sunday. So now we're into a coaching search. We got the Brent Grimes thing, which Joe himself, JoeBucksFan.com, broke yesterday, which is some news, which isn't all that surprising, but still is kind of illustrative of all the things that have been wrong with this franchise, both this year and in years past. And we got plenty more. So, again, a lot of fun planned for you. I'm excited about 2019. If you want to get a hold of me, it's very simple. My email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's B-O-B-B-Y-G-A-M-E-D-A-Y @yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me @bobbygameday. The Free Stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford. And, of course, they are announcing a nationwide lifetime warranty that you get on new and pre-owned vehicles. So that includes unlimited years, unlimited miles, 10-year roadside assistance, 1 year of complimentary service. You bring it in, they'll change the oil, do all that stuff. That's all you got to do. They're located a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. Or you can just go to the website first, see all the inventory and all the transparent online pricing. It's all right there. BillCurryFord.com. Curry is with an I-E on the end. C-U-R-R-I-E. BillCurryFord.com. See Sean Sullivan. He's the new general manager. Mention Joe Bucks Fan or mention my name or mention the Free Stretch, and you'll get a discount on top of the online pricing. Again, that's already put up there for all to see. Proudly serving the Tampa community for 58 years. And Sean is a fellow Jesuit high grad, by the way, which counts for something for me. Maybe not for you guys, but another reason to go down there and see him as we Jesuit Tigers stick together. But anyway, as for today, so first of all, it's been a couple of weeks of, I don't want to say pain. I enjoy spending time with my kids, but it's Christmas break, so I've had some things rearranged on the recording schedule because normally I record during the day after I take them to school, but there is no school right now, so I've had them all day. So today, for example, and I'm recording this on Friday morning, I had to set them up in front of the TV with YouTube, which I hate doing. I don't normally like to encourage them just vegging out for over an hour to watch videos. And you ought to see some of the inane things they watch on you. I mean, I don't mean things that are like inappropriate or anything. I just mean inane. And normally I frown upon that, but my recording studio is their playroom, so I needed them out of here. So I went and set them up in there to watch YouTube, gave my son the remote. He's 7, the daughter's 3. So he fires up the app on our smart TV, and the first thing he brings up today, and I was actually kind of proud, is, and there's all kinds of videos on YouTube. They make everything. Somebody made a mashup of the greatest single play from every Super Bowl from the year 2000 to the present. So I actually, when he put that on, stopped for a minute. I said, you know what? I'm going to sit down and watch this one with you before I go do the show in your playroom. Just, I want to watch this too. So we started watching it. So I'll pause for a moment and let you try and guess. And I was able to guess it on the first try. But what you think the first or the best play, or at least in the mind of whoever created this video, was for the Bucs Super Bowl win in 2002 over the Raiders. I will pause for a moment and let you try to guess. Because to me, it was a no-brainer, even though there were so many great plays in that game. And now that I've given you a moment, it was Derrick Brooks' interception return for a touchdown. Even though that one was kind of later in the game when the game felt already sealed, it was still, to me, that given Derrick Brooks' history and given the struggle the team had to climb out of from where it was to where it ended up getting to, and then DB's pick six off of Rich Gannon to put the icing on the cake, even though the Bucs got another one a little bit later on from Dwight Smith on like the second to last play of the game or whatever it was. That was the one. So that was the one. It was a great video. If you want to get in the mood for the NFL playoffs, wild card weekend this weekend and all that, again, you can find anything on YouTube. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because now that the season has ended and the Bucs finished 5-11, you know, looking back at that Super Bowl, that personified all the casting off of the shackles of loserdom that the Bucs had for almost my entire childhood. And when I think of the Bucks, you know, I think back at how bad they used to be and then finally breaking through and winning. And my mind, I'm still in that place where it's like, yep, Bucks aren't losers anymore. They won that Super Bowl. We're not one of those teams anymore. And I kind of don't realize it's been 16 years. And in the ensuing, well, not all 16 years, but in the past 10 years, we've gone right back to what we were before. And as the season wound down against Atlanta on Sunday, and they did get their loss, as many of you were hoping for, and they did get their higher draft pick, picking number 5 now. And yeah, even though I said sometimes I just root for the Bucks to win because I want them to win, if they had won that game, I would have forgotten about it 5 minutes later. If they had lost that game, I would have forgotten about it 5 minutes later. Either way, the draft pick would have changed by a few spots one way or the other. So the loss doesn't really hurt. I felt bad for Dirk Cutter, watching him walk off the field and things like that. And then, of course, the inevitable firing that took place later on. And Jason Light going up there and speaking the next day. And, you know, he looked pretty emotional up there and all that. But point is, the Bucks just wrapped up another losing season. And if you look at all of Bucks history, all 42 seasons, you really can take that era from 1997 through 2002 with the Super Bowl, which again, in my mind, my idealistic mind, that maybe sometimes doesn't see reality the way it should when it comes to the things I love the most, because I love them so. You don't realize, like, that sliver of time, 97 through 2002, six seasons. And if you want to even extend it, really 97 through the end of the Gruden era in 2008. That was one era where things were pretty okay, but other than that, up to and including today, the entire history of this franchise is just an absolute wreck. And Thomas Bassinger kind of summed it up in his article, and I reading this article the other day, and he's written a lot of articles lately. Love Thomas Bassinger. Would like to get him on the show one day when I figure out how to get the technology to have a guest in my kid's playroom. But he wrote about the Bucks' overall history, and even as much of as I consider myself a Bucks historian. Like, I've been watching the Bucks since the early 80s. I was born in 1980. I've told the story a million times on the show, how my mom, pregnant with me by several months in January of 1980, trudged up the stairs at the old Sombrero for the Bucks game against the Rams in the NFC Championship. And a few weeks before that, she trudged up the stairs in the pouring rain to watch Neil O'Donoghue hit a field goal and the Bucks beat the Chiefs 3-0 to clinch their first playoff berth. And little Bobby Fenton in utero, little blastocyst Bobby Fenton, was there. And then, of course, I was born, and it takes a few years to be cognizant of what's going on around you. But I can remember as far back as 1985, the Bucks, and growing up with that. And the Bandits, too, 83, 84, 85. I have distinct memories of going to Bandits games, too, even as a 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old. I swear I do. So I know all these things that were written in this article, but when they all got put in one place, it kind of shook me a little bit as a Bucks fan. For example, as much of an expert as I consider myself on the Bucks and Bucks history, and not even necessarily a football expert, I'm just talking about like looking back over the history of the Bucks. The Bucks now have, after that game, a .385 all-time winning percentage. I did not realize it was that low. Even knowing how bad so many seasons were in the 80s, I didn't realize it was below .400. I also didn't realize, and I guess I should have known this, but of all of the major professional sports and all of the teams in those sports in all of North America, the .385 win percentage is the worst of any of those teams. I thought for sure we were like in the bottom five maybe. I did not realize we were the worst, though. Like, that kind of hurt a little bit. Even though I know these things, it still kind of hurt a little bit. So, some other numbers that were thrown out there in Bassinger's article. The Bucks have finished in last place 8 times in the past 10 years. And that's only second to the Browns, who've done it 9 times, although they had a pretty decent season by their standards this year. The Bucks, of course, as we know, have now missed the playoffs 11 years in a row, have not won a playoff game in 16 years, which was that Super Bowl win against the Raiders in 2002. And this is the one that really just absolutely mind-bleeped me, okay? So let's talk math for a second. There's 32 teams, there's 16 in each conference, and 6 teams from each conference make the playoffs. So if you assign just random chance to that, like forgetting about if some teams are more likely than others to make or miss the playoffs, and just assign you know, 16 ping pong balls, and we're going to draw six of them out of the hopper, and, you know, those are the playoff teams. That would mean that each team, totally random chance, has a 37% chance of making the playoffs and a 63% chance of missing the playoffs in any given year. So, the chances of missing the playoffs 11 years in a row, like the Bucks have, are 0.57%. The chances of doing what the Bucks just did, if you assign random chance to it, is less than 1%. And the Bucks were able to manage that while specifically not being random, but trying to avoid that exact scenario and actually trying to make the playoffs. And yes, I realize 15 other NFC teams have been as well, but still, let that sink in for a moment. The chances of doing what the Bucks just did, missing the playoffs 11 straight years, just randomly, are less than 1%, and almost less than one half of 1%. And it just made me sad knowing that. I did not know. Like, I know they've missed the playoffs 11 straight years. I know that they should have done better than that. I know all these things, like, in my subconscious mind. But to have it laid out there so starkly like that, and to realize just how bad it's been. And, you know what? There are sports fans who have it worse. I can't complain. I mean, there's four teams that have never even been to the Super Bowl. There's a handful of teams that have never won it. If you had told me that night in 2002 about what was about to happen, hey, the Bucks are in the Super Bowl. Guess what's about to happen? The one night that it matters the most in your entire franchise's history, every single thing is about to go exactly perfectly. Because that's what happened that night. You could have told me that night in 2002, like, every single thing is going to go right tonight. The one night, after all the things that have gone wrong, the one night where it matters most is going to be perfect tonight. And it was. I know the Raiders kind of came back a little bit in the second half, but never threatened. I mean, the Bucks just, it was just magnificent. So if you had told me I could have that, but then I'd be subject to 16 more years that are going to be a lot like the 16 years prior, a little bit better. They won a couple division titles, but a lot like that overall. I'm not exactly sure what I would have answered, but at that point in time, with the Bucks having never won and none of my teams having ever won a championship, the Lightning hadn't won their cup yet, the Gators hadn't won their national championships yet. I wasn't in college in 1996, so I was championship starved. I probably would have taken the deal, even knowing that we'd be here today talking about another lost decade and a half. The Patriots, the article continues, have won at least 10 games 16 straight years. The Bucks have won 10 games twice in that span, and they only made the playoffs one of those times. In team history, they've won 10 games 7 times. Now, here's one more. Just one more, and I'll move on with it, because I'm not here to go into the history books all day. To get to a 500 win percentage, just even, for their franchise's history, the Bucks would have to go 16-0 for the next 10 seasons, 160 straight. If they do that, they'd be 500 all-time. Now, I don't care about the all-time franchise winning percentage. What's past is past. I care about their 2019 winning percentage right now. But it just illustrated everything that, like I said, was wrong with this franchise, not just this year, but in years past. But speaking of this year, Joe broke a story yesterday. And again, I shouldn't be surprised, but it just goes to show you. And if you're on the website, of course, joebucksfan.com, there's so much going on the site all the time. There's already been a dozen stories or so posted since then. But there was news about Brent Grimes. And this wasn't like something that, I mean, this was on his podcast with his wife, Miko. Miko's podcast. You know all about Miko. iHeart Miko is the name of the podcast. And Grimes went on the show with her to kind of do a recap of the 2018 season. He went game by game, talked about how, you know, in this game he did this, could have been better, or actually in this game he did this well and people might not have realized it, on and on and on. That's fine, whatever. He talked about a game early in the season. You probably remember the Monday night game against Pittsburgh. And he was hurt in the first two games and didn't play. So his first game of the year was against Pittsburgh. And on the article on the website, on Joe Bucks Fan, it reads, after being injured and missing the first two games, Grimes returned against Pittsburgh on Monday Night Football with the Bucks 2-0. He said he got upset before that game because the Bucks coaches asked him to shadow Antonio Brown all game. Quote, we get to the Steelers and then they start asking me to follow people, Grimes said. explain that corners that follow receivers all the time earn $13 to $15 million a year. Grimes was playing on a contract for $7 million this year. Quote, that just bleeped up my whole vibe for the whole year, to be completely honest. And the reason this story hit home with me, because it's not surprising. I mean, the Bucks were a train wreck all year, so when you hear stories coming out in the wash after the fact about just how bad things were, you can't do anything but shake your head. But, you know, Brent Grimes, who has been very good, I mean, last year, not necessarily this year, but last year was very good, one of the lone bright spots on this defense. I mean, I'll give him credit for his play. And $7 million is not as much as $13 to $15 million, as he says. But I know what it is more than. And $7 million is more than he would have gotten from any other team last year. So, first of all, you know, you want to start comparing salaries, that's one thing. But Brent Grimes, to make $7 million here, is a lot of money. Now, I know what it's like, I really do, to work and feel like you're being underpaid, underappreciated, and then you start comparing yourself to other people who do similar jobs that you think you're better than or as good than, and you I know what that's like. Hey, I had a career in radio once upon a time, okay? Many times I've done that. I've been promoted without getting raises, or I've just simply been held down to a certain salary and had my responsibilities increase. I've done all that stuff. Anybody who's worked in radio has, no matter what level you've reached in radio. At some point, you probably had that happen to you if you worked in radio. So I know what it's like to be disgruntled and to think, man, they're getting a great deal with me, and then they ask me to do all this stuff, and they won't even give me a little extra and blah, blah. I know what that's like. I really do. But again, Brent Grimes, I don't think, was in any place to feel that way, making $7 million here, when, again, that's as much as he would have gotten anywhere else, and certainly no more. I mean, certainly no more. So, at the end of the day, what it really does, it just makes you feel dumb as a fan. Maybe it doesn't make you feel, it makes me feel dumb. Because we come on here every week, we do our show, Joe writes articles, Joe does podcasts, Justin does podcasts, Ira does podcasts, you all listen, you all put your heart and soul into this as fans, you all spend money, or at the very least you spend time, you definitely spend emotional capital, if nothing else, right? We do all those things. We get all wrapped up every week. Oh, let's break down what went wrong. How can the Bucks do better? Hey, maybe we can make the playoffs. Like, we get all our hopes all high all the time. And then you read a story like this and you realize, like, we're just fools. Like, we got guys like this. And Brent Grimes, again, I'm not saying I don't somewhat identify with how he was feeling. But we got stuff like this going on. And the coaches had to, like, coax him to go in there and freaking cover a receiver one-on-one because, God forbid, you ask your best cornerback to do that. And you feel dumb. Like, you feel like you're wasting your time. And I'll never stop doing it. I mean, I'll never stop being a football fan or a Bucks fan or anything like that. And I'm not naive that it's a business and that these guys don't actually care about the Tampa Bay Bucks. They care about their careers and they happen to play for the Tampa Bay Bucks. I know all that. Everybody's like that. That's fine. But yet you hear about, I mean, I remember when they were 2-0. Do you remember when they were 2-0? Do you remember how fired up we were for that Monday night game? All geeked up? What if you had known before the fact that, oh yeah, your number one corner is going to get pissed off that they're asking him to cover their number one receiver, that he doesn't want to do that. Doesn't think he gets paid enough, doesn't think he should have to, and his mind is now in a bad place, his attitude is in a bad place for the rest of the season going forward because of that. You'd feel dumb, you'd feel cheated, you'd feel like you invested in something emotionally, and that investment wasn't being returned. So, hats off to Joe for actually sitting down and listening to the Miko podcast to begin with and doing all these things and transcribing for all of us so that we don't have to. And, you know, end of the day, weeks later now, we realize where we are and we realize it was probably all never going to happen in 2018. So here we are again now looking ahead. Hopes are high again. We're excited about the coaching search again. Now, there's been a ton of going back and forth on Twitter between, I mean, with me, with some of you guys, between, I mean, again, if you keep it on Joe Bucks fan, you're going to get the latest no matter what. We could go candidate by candidate. The latest now, you know, Brian Kelly's name came up. He's out of the running. Chris Richard has interviewed. Eric Bieniemy has interviewed. George Edwards has interviewed. Of course, the wild card in all this is Bruce Arians. And I had a couple people ask me this week, like, hey, Bobby, what do you think of Bruce Arians? what's going to happen. Well, first of all, let's divide that into two parts. All right, first of all, what do I think of Bruce Arians as a coach? I'd love to have Bruce Arians as our coach. I mean, strictly from a football standpoint, I would love that. My concerns with Bruce Arians are not that he's too old, but he walked away, retired once. And then you hear all these things, oh, well, he said, oh, he'll come back just for the Browns. Okay, so we let that simmer for a few weeks. And then, oh, well, now he texted somebody and specifically said he'd go to the Bucs because he likes Jason Light and knows him, and he likes Jameis Winston. And you hear all these rumors and innuendo and whispers and murmurs and all that stuff. And, I mean, he retired a year ago. He's in his late 60s. And I don't blame him. I'm just saying, do you really want to coach? Joe put up a thing today on the website that's the headlines, Tread Carefully with Bruce Arians, and it's got Mike Lombardi, some quotes and things saying, you know, we hear all these things. Does he want to coach or not? Because if he wants to coach or not, you know, I don't need to hear secondhand, oh, he texted somebody that, yeah, he'd do this, or I heard from somebody else that he's only going to do one job if it's one team. You know, you're either out there or you're not. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, okay? I do not know what's going on behind the scenes. The Bruce Arians thing, though, and I said this to a couple of people that asked me about it this week when we were on Twitter going back and forth. The Bruce Arians thing feels like one of those things, like Parcells, like Chip Kelly. There's always that one hot name that comes right out of the gate, and all the fans are talking about it, baby. You know, this is our guy, we're going to do this, and it's always a bigger name. This is where we're going to go. And that first name is never the one. You always go down the list. It's never the one everybody's talking about right off the bat, you know? And the Bruce Arians thing feels like that. If I'm wrong, I'll be happy because I would love to see him come here. Again, this is not the football side of it. I'm in. I dig with him. You look at what he did in Arizona. You look at what the quarterbacks under him have been able to do and things like that. In Arizona, you know, they went to the Super Bowl under Ken Whisenhunt, but then they trailed off again. And they've never really been a winning franchise to begin with. He comes in there, they consistently win for several years. And he does well. Colts was the same thing when he was filling in for Pagano when Pagano had his illness. I mean, the guy has consistently won. The guy has consistently been competitive. I mean, if you look back over his coaching record, his teams win. And they haven't always made the playoffs. They haven't always gone to the Super Bowl, the NFC Championship game, but they've always been, you know, they've been 13-3 or whatever, 11-5, but they've also been 9-7, 8-8. They have not been bad, okay? They're always around it, which I talk about how important that is, not just taking your shot one year and going all in, but just being around it year after year. And he seems like a guy that could do that here. So that'd be fine, but I just don't believe that it's real. It feels like one of those things that we're all talking about and talking about and talking about, and then they announce the hire and it's somebody else, and then a week later you find out that, oh, the Bruce Arians thing was never real, and all these reports come out from all these insiders that give you information that they should have given you 2 weeks ago if they were really insiders, but then after the fact, oh, yeah, nah, he wasn't doing that. That was just a smokescreen, or that was just his agent, or whatever the hell, you know. So that's why I'm not, and I haven't been doing a ton of head coaching speculation on this show, because we just don't know. We know about all the interviews, and those get reported and things like that. And there may be more. And, you know, I have no idea if they can announce Bruce Arians as the head coach tomorrow, or we could get an announcement 2 weeks from now about some name that we haven't even heard in the entire process. I mean, not everything is going to be known. And sometimes the things that are known because other people want you to know them. And if the people in high places didn't want you to know, you wouldn't know. So we'll see. But again, it just feels like one of those things that it isn't really a thing. Now, I've heard a lot of back and forth, and it's always interesting to hear what other people think about the Bucs, because we're kind of too close to it sometimes. So, you know, we know what all the local reporters think, all the local bloggers think, all the local talk show hosts think, and things like that. But it's always interesting to hear just national perspectives, because you don't get a lot of them on the Bucs. Most people don't pay that much attention to the Bucs. But when Adam Schefter tweeted, and again, this is just a random thing that I noticed, Adam Schefter tweeted, this is about a week ago now, Bucks intend to bring back Jameis Winston as their starting QB in 2019, per sources. We all knew that, obviously. So Michael David Smith, who's a writer for ProFootballTalk.com, who has an enjoyable Twitter follow, I love hearing his thoughts on things, he said, quote, "So the owners are going to tell the next head coach he's stuck with their choice of starting quarterback. And you wonder why some franchises just keep losing no matter who their head coach is. So first of all, that's the perception of the Bucks. Doesn't matter who they get, they're a bad franchise, they'll screw it up, they'll lose, they won't get this right. But the perception around nationally is that, can you believe these guys are going to say to a head coach that they don't even know who it is yet, they're already going to make his most important decision for him and foist Jameis Winston upon him? Why not just hire good coaches and get out of their way and let them decide? And I get that. I mean, that makes sense. But I guess for me, it comes down to this. Any good coach or any coach who... I shouldn't say any good coach because there's a lot of ways to skin a cat, but a coach should be coming in here saying, hell yes, I can make something happen with Jameis Winston. Look at that guy. He's good. He's young. He's right on the cusp of it. As young as he is, he's experienced. A good coach ought to be excited as hell to have Jameis Winston as his quarterback. To me. So, I don't look at it as Jameis Winston being foisted upon some new coach who's a patsy and is just going to do whatever the owners say. I look at it as someone who takes this job has the savvy to realize how good Jameis Winston is and can be, and is excited to start working with him and make him even better. Because if you look around the NFL, it still boggles my mind that people think like the Bucs are one of those teams with quarterback issues. When you look at all the issues on this team, quarterback is so far down the list it does not even register for me. And people around the league think the Bucs are making a big mistake by naming Jameis Winston their quarterback before they even have talked to all their head coaching candidates. I don't see it as a big deal. I think it's obvious that Jameis Winston is their starting quarterback for next year. I don't think any candidate's going to be scared away like that. When you look around the league and you look at the quarterback situations for all these teams, I mean, who in the hell else do you think the Bucs should get, or what should they do? If you went to start a full-scale rebuild, like, this might be a different story if Trevor Lawrence or something was coming out in the next draft or the next year after this, you know, that draft, that'd be different. Watching him for Clemson the past few weeks, and, you know, they'll play in the national title game on Monday night, which I'm very excited for, against Alabama. That's a guy I'd sell my soul for. I mean, he's just good. He's going to be, like, he's one of those guys you like point to him. He's going to be good in the NFL. I'm not saying he's Peyton Manning yet, but he's that type of draft pick where if and when he comes out, no-brainer. Even though I know they argued about Manning and Leaf, it was never going to be anybody but Manning, number one. So, that'd be different. But he's not coming out this year. And neither is Justin Herbert from Oregon, even though he's not that good yet either, if you watch that game in the Red Box Bowl against Michigan State. So, my point is, there's no studs coming out in the draft. I know Dwayne Haskins is now the thing. Oh, Dwayne Haskins, the Bucs should look at him at number five. Okay, you know, to me, you've got a quarterback that I think 15 teams would like to have. And by the time another year or two passes, I bet he's a quarterback that probably 20 to 25 teams would like to have. This is me saying that. And I know maybe I see him in a different light than people nationally, and a lot of us do too. But I don't see it as a problem that the Buccaneers have named him their guy next year before the coach is hired, when in reality, I think any coach who is smart enough to observe this situation from afar would say, oh yeah, he's going to be my quarterback too. Let's do it. So that's where we're at with that. I mean, again, the whole thing with who the coach will be when it comes out, I said this last week, there's no formula. Don't think, oh, it has to be an up-and-coming coordinator. Oh, it has to be the next McVay or the next, you know, Nagy from the Bears or something like that. It could be a defensive guy. It could be an offensive guy. It could be a younger guy. It could be an older guy. It could be an ex-head coach. It could be someone who's never been a coach before. And, you know, Bieniemy's the hot one now. Eric Bieniemy, who is the Chiefs offensive coordinator, former Colorado running back in college, played in the NFL a long time, and now the OC with the Chiefs. He does not call the plays. This is his first year. You know, Nagy came from the same thing. He was the Chiefs guy, and then he was calling the plays. Now he's doing what he's doing with the Bears. Bieniemy's the next one, an up-and-comer. And we mentioned him last week on the show, just kind of in passing, said, yeah, maybe he needs a little more seasoning. Maybe he doesn't, though. The thing about this is we have to look at these coaching hires a lot like draft picks. I mean, people make it sound like, oh, you just have to identify the best coach and hire him. You don't know. And again, it's not like there's a formula where if a guy has X and Y on his resume, then Z will follow when he's the head coach. There might be guys who have never been a head coach before and never even been a coordinator before that are position coaches, and they're a hell of a head coach. There might be guys that are like the Peter principle. You know the Peter principle, where they're a good coordinator and they've been successful at every level of coaching up through coordinator, and now you put them at head coach and it doesn't work out. The Peter principle, by the way, is interesting. If you've never heard of it, it's the theory. I have to look up, I forget what it's named after off the top of my head, but the Peter principle is the theory that most people are in a job that's one level above where they really should be. And the idea behind it is that what happens when you do a good job at your job? You get promoted, right? Like if you do something well, you get moved up to the next level. I mean, in theory, this is supposed to be how it works. So everybody that does a good job at their job gets promoted, and then finally you stop getting promoted. Basically, because you're the last job you had that you were really good at was probably the job you should have, but now you've been moved up one more because you were so good at the last one, and eventually you peter out. That's not why it's named the Peter Principle. Eventually, you peter out from all the promotions, and you get to a spot where you're one level above where you're going to be. Because anytime you do well, they let you stop doing the job you're doing well at, right, and give you a new job until you don't do it well. So there's a lot of coaching candidates and a lot of head coaches in the past that have met that principle. They were great assistants. They were great, you know, when they were grad assistants in college, then they became assistants, position coaches, all that. Then they became coordinators eventually, did well, all that. Then they became head coaches. Well, oh no, this sucks. What would happen? This guy has done everything well all the way up. Well, maybe he was a good coordinator and that was it. Maybe he wasn't supposed to be a head coach. And conversely, you know, maybe, just maybe, there's guys who aren't necessarily offensive coordinators or defensive coordinators who just go straight to it. I know John Harbaugh was a special teams coach. And I know all of us would take him right now, right? I mean, he's one that we've heard a name mentioned here and there. Oh, they'll trade for him. The Ravens are open to it. I think it's crazy on the Ravens' part. They're getting ready to play and host a playoff game this weekend. And I don't think he's coming here or anywhere else, really. But the point is, there's no formula for the background for these guys, and when you start realizing that there's almost or maybe as much or more luck involved with hiring a coach as there is in drafting players, you realize you shouldn't limit yourself just based on, oh, well, I don't like his pedigree for this, or oh, he did really well at this, so he's a great... I mean, there's guys you like going in. I like Chris Richard from what I've read and learned about him in the past few weeks. Obviously, Arians, you know, when it's a guy who's done it before, you can say, oh, well, he's done it before, but it doesn't mean he'll do it again. And there's very few guys where you could say, oh, this guy would turn around right now. And he, like, if you told me a Bill Belichick's going to come take the Bucs over, yeah, then I'd be like, okay, I feel pretty good about the Bucs' chances. But even that wouldn't be a guarantee. You know, maybe he does what he does in New England, but he doesn't do it here. There's so many factors and so many things. So open your minds on that. And just let's see what they do. When the Glazers do it, we'll come on here and we'll do a whole thing and we'll dig into the coach's past and we'll try to figure this, that, and the other out and all those things. But in the meantime, you know, all I can tell you is what I'd be excited about. I'd be excited about Bruce Arians. I'd be excited about Chris Richard. You know, they've also interviewed George Edwards, the Minnesota DC. He's got a very good history. And the Vikings defense. But you always worry about when it's a guy under a guy of the same mindset as the head coach, how much of it's the coordinator and how much of it's the coach, especially when the coach is the head coach is the one still calling the shots, like with Bieniemy. You know, how much of that is Reed, how much of that is Bieniemy? Bieniemy doesn't call the plays. With George Edwards from Minnesota, how much is that at Zimmer? How much is, you know, you don't know. You just don't know. I do know this. I forgot to mention this when I was talking about the Bucs season wrapping up before. I wanted to mention Gerald McCoy real quick. I just got a tweet from one of my good followers who I always appreciate, Travis Combs. Travis says, Bobby, who are the real leaders in that Bucs locker room? With the news about Brent Grimes and Mijax, talking about DeSean Jackson, and last year Swaggy Baker, God, I haven't thought about him in several months and I was happy. Are there any leaders on this team? Being a leader isn't always fun sometimes. You have to be a disciplinarian. When guys go astray, you have to guide them back. You know, I don't know who the leaders are. Being someone who watches the Bucs and being someone who plays for the Bucs and is in the locker room is not the same thing. You know, I don't know how much Lavonte David says or does when he's in that locker room. And looking up and down the roster on both sides of the ball, I mean, certainly you look for your best players to be leaders too. It's always convenient when it works out that way. But, you know, I don't think Mike Evans is a locker room leader type, just judging from what I see. I don't know for sure. Jameis Winston should be and could be, but he's got a lot of making up time to do, because when you're suspended for the first three games and then benched and this and that, it's kind of hard to be the unquestioned leader. You know, Kwon before he got... I don't know. Gerald McCoy is someone who you might have said he's one of those guys once upon a time, but after the game on Sunday against Atlanta, he gave a very emotional talk to reporters, had sunglasses on hiding his eyes, which you could tell were probably welling up with tears, and it sounded like for all intents and purposes he's not going to be back at the amount of money he'll be due at his advanced age. I don't want to say advanced age, but he's not getting younger. And given the production, which is pretty okay, but what did he have, 6.5 sacks? Gerald McCoy, it's always been this debate, oh, is Gerald McCoy underappreciated? He's actually really good, and Bucks fans don't appreciate him, and others, oh, no, he sucks. You never hear his name called. I'm tired of hearing about Gerald McCoy and how underappreciated, blah, blah. It goes both sides. And as with most of these things, it's somewhere in the middle. Gerald McCoy's a good football player. I mean, if you watch not just the stat sheet, but if you look at individual plays he makes, and sometimes it's as simple as, you know, guys double teaming. I mean, he takes one in one arm by the chest and one in the other arm by the chest, and he pushes both of them back with one arm each and doesn't get moved out of the way. That's not going to be registered as a sack. It might not even be registered as a tackle, but he affects plays. He absolutely does. He's a good player, okay? I don't know what it is. I mean, I do know what it is in part because the Bucks have been mostly terrible under his regime. Not that it's his fault, but I'm saying, I just, when I think back at the greats of Buccaneer history, and of course Sapp's the one McCoy gets compared to, but whether it's Warren Sapp or Simeon Rice or Rondi Barber or John Lynch or all these guys on defense, you know, you associate so many positive things with their time here, aside from just their specific play on the field. I mean, I can remember specific plays Sapp made. I certainly remember specific plays that Simeon Rice made. Certainly the guys on the outside, like Rondi or like John Lynch, you know, you remember interceptions and things like that. Those are things that are like easily memorable. They're easily recordable and things like that. You're not going to remember, oh, Gerald McCoy, this one time they double-teamed him and he held up against the double team and the running back had to bounce it out and then he got tackled for a loss. You know, you don't remember that. I understand that. And that is kind of McCoy's legacy here, is being just a good player. But when you think of the best player here, who's supposed to be the best player on the team, you think of flashier stuff. And I don't have a lot of those memories from McCoy. My actual most vivid Gerald McCoy memory is when he intercepted Tim Tebow at Oklahoma in the national title game, because I was sitting right there in the first row. And I remember seeing that happen, thinking, wow, you know, it was like a weird like little screen pass type thing in Miami in the Orange, or not the Orange Bowl, the BCS Championship game. It was the Orange Bowl at the time. But, you know, that's the type of thing I remember. And his time with the Bucks is mostly littered with games that didn't actually matter that much. And that's the problem. I mean, it's not Gerald McCoy. All those memories of Sapp and Lynch and Barber and Brooks come from games that mattered at the time. Whether it was regular season games or playoff games or the Super Bowl itself, you remember them so vividly because, oh man, this is big. And nothing Gerald McCoy ever did seemed to matter that much, because nothing the Bucks have done in the past 10 years seems to matter that much. So, it's a mixed legacy. You know, he was 11th in sacks by defensive tackles in 2018 with 6.5. Again, that's not bad. It's good. It's not like transcendent. And you think of transcendence when you, or you want to think of transcendence when you think of a guy like Gerald McCoy. So anyway, it doesn't look like he'll be back here. He is, by all accounts, a fantastic human being and a hell of a football player, and I wish him luck. And to see him get as emotional as he did, I hurt for him, you know? I mean, I felt bad for him on Sunday afternoon. And so, you know, now we're moving on. Same thing with Dirk Koetter. And Jason Light got emotional up on the podium. This is one reason, I mean, we could argue about Light staying or going all day long. He's staying. I do think Jason Light cares, though. I mean, I really do. I do think he's a guy who, yeah, obviously, everybody cares when it's their job and they want to do well and they want to, you know, keep their job. and be known as one of the... But, I mean, Jason Light on a human level cares, which I appreciate about him. And we'll see what he's able to do with this next hire and what the Bucks are able to do with this next hire, one way or the other. One thing we don't need to talk about, I'm sick of seeing his name on Twitter amongst Bucks fans, is Le'Veon Bell. Stop with the Le'Veon Bell thing, okay? It's absurd. For all the thing, I mean, I don't know if y'all don't realize this, and by y'all, I mean the Le'Veon Bell people, because most of y'all do realize this, but running backs, you can get them anywhere. You can get them anytime. They can match the production of other running backs who, like Saquon Barkley, transcendent. There's that word again. He's transcendent, right? I mean, oh my God, Saquon Barkley. Well, not only Le'Veon Bell, but James Conner. Kind of match Saquon Barkley's production this year. And these are just guys. I think Barber's really good for the Bucks. When you look at the offensive line he has to work with and some of the things he's able to make happen with what he's given, you don't need to be going spending. I mean, Le'Veon Bell just sat out a season from the team that drafted him for $14 million. Imagine just saying no to $14 million. I don't care how much you think you should be making or whatever it is. Imagine going all the way. Like, we thought, oh, he'll come back. It was his whole story all year. Imagine saying no to $14 million, okay? He did that. And you think he's going to come to the Bucks for anything less than what? I mean, it's going to cost at least, you know, in the double-digit millions of dollars for a running back. Don't do that. Don't do that. With all the needs the Bucks have at different places, with all the ways that money could be used, and y'all want Le'Veon Bell coming off sitting out a year instead of... No, I mean, absolutely not. It's an unequivocal no for me to say that. So, here we are now as we approach Wild Card Weekend. And before I wrap things up on the show, I just want to look back because if you remember, I was sitting here in the preseason talking about the now much ballyhooed Wild Card Cruise, as I call it. And this was the cruise that my wife booked for our family. I've never been on a cruise before. And back in the off season, in the summertime of this past year, she was like, well, I'm going to book a cruise for January, you know, 5th through 8th or 10th or whatever. I don't even know what the dates are, but we're going and, you know, we're leaving Saturday. So I'm excited for this cruise. It's going to be fun. But I remember thinking, well, that's Wild Card Weekend. What's going to happen if the Bucks make the playoffs? I should be able to watch the game on the ship, right? Yeah, you can watch it on the ship. Okay, well, what happens if they win the NFC South and, you know, they're hosting the playoffs? I'm not going to miss a home playoff. Like, I'll watch a game on TV from afar, but if the game is in Tampa, a Bucks playoff game at home, no chance I'm missing that. So it was a whole thing on the show. We did a cruise watch every week. The Bucks went 2-0. The cruise watch needle was all the way to the right. I was worried I was going to have to go into mediation with my wife and get some sort of divorce lawyer for telling her I'm skipping out on the cruise to go to a Bucks playoff game. So anyway, obviously that fluctuated a little bit in the early part of the season. Then the needle dropped dead on the left side and didn't move pretty much after week 6 or 7, as there was no chance of the Bucks winning the South. Well, here we are now. It's cruise week. I'm excited. But I'm really excited, too, because two of my favorite weekends of the year, Wild Card Weekend and the Divisional Round next weekend. You get four games Saturday night, Saturday afternoon, Saturday night, then Sunday afternoon, early and late. And it's just, I mean, all we've been watching, everything we've been doing all season long as NFL fans, not just Bucks fans, comes down to this. I'm geeked. So I'm looking forward to watching the games. I'm pretty sure, be able to watch them on the boat. And, you know, this whole season in the NFL has been a pretty good one. If you remember last year how, I don't want to say awful because no football season is ever awful, but everybody was getting hurt. The quality of the games wasn't that good. There was the whole thing, people saying, oh, well, people are sick of the NFL, and this is the beginning of the end, concussions and Kaepernick and blah, blah, blah. And at the time, I said it was all moronic. And certainly the injuries didn't help and things like that. And the quality of the games, just it was just one of those years where there wasn't a lot of drama, and it just wasn't a great year. Fine. This year, things have come back roaringly. It's been a fantastic year in the NFL, the Bucks notwithstanding, as far as the major player injuries haven't been as prominent. The games have been exciting. Of course, people are attributing that to scoring being up, and maybe so. We've got a wide-open playoff field. I mean, usually, and not that the favorites always win, but there's still a couple of heavier favorites. But this year, it won't even be an upset if some other team 1 through 6 wins, because they feel like, with the exception of maybe a couple of them, I feel like they could all win it. I mean, there's no like, oh man, you're not going to get past those teams with the first round bye. They're unbeatable. Hell no, they all have issues. I mean, the Saints look pretty hard to beat in the dome. Chiefs, as good as they are, their defense is a little bit questionable. Patriots haven't looked like themselves this year, which is a testament to the Patriots because they haven't looked like themselves. Meanwhile, they've just got a first-round bye again, even though they're like just kind of like, nah, we're just the Patriots this year. You know, all the wildcard teams this week, you know, Seahawks, Cowboys, I mean, these spreads, they're all one-point games. Texans are only favored by a point against the Colts. That's a toss-up. Seahawks, Cowboys, Cowboys by two, pretty much a toss-up. Chargers, Ravens, toss-up. Bears are the only favorite of more than a field goal this week. They're favored by 6.5 against the Eagles. And I'm geeked for it. It sounds like you guys are too by the TV ratings, which we were all told were tanking and cratering, and the NFL had to do something. And this is why all that Kaepernick nonsense was such nonsense, because it was people with political agendas trying to use something for their political agenda when that had nothing to do with it. The average NFL game this year was 15.75, almost 16 million viewers. That is up 5% from last year. The Fox Sunday afternoon game was up 2%. The CBS Sunday afternoon game was up 6%. Sunday Night Football on NBC was up 6% as well. Monday Night Football up 8% from last year. For those of you bashing Joe Tessitore and Booger and Jason Witten, I think it's fine. It doesn't bother me either way. Fox on Thursday Night Football up 4%. Across the board, everything up, 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 up. I have a feeling the playoff games will be up this weekend, next week too. And I'll be one of them. I don't know if they count ratings on cruise ships, but I'll certainly be pinging that number. All right, so have fun watching it all. It always is a little bit tough when your team's not part of it, but think of it this way. And you know, I'm already starting to get to that point, even though I shouldn't be thinking about it yet. We've got 11 football games left. 12 if you're a college football game. We got a college football fan. We've got 12 football games left. We got the 11 playoff games. We've got the national championship on Monday night. And that's it for the 2018 football season. It has gone by so fast, as they all do. But this, even though there are so few games left, is the culmination of all those other games we've watched. And this is the fun. I mean, it's all the fun part. This is where it gets real. Like, I love the NFL playoffs. And I love the college football national title game. I love the college football playoff. I love the bowl. I love all that stuff. All right? So here we are now. Have fun with it. Take care of yourself. Have parties. Have friends over. Get together with buddies. I mean, watching the playoff games was always something that I did with other people if I could. You know, it's a little tougher with things now with the family, but I, you know, watch it with my kids now. My son's getting old enough where he can understand the bracket. We got the little plastic helmet set a couple years ago, and I actually make a little bracket on our coffee table with the team helmets, and it gets them into it. And it's fun. It's fun. So Wildcard Weekend is among the most fun. Have fun with that. Oh, one more thing, by the way. The Dunedin Pirates, okay? If you want to play football, real tackle football with shoulder pads and helmets, not flag football, the Florida Football Alliance is a semi-pro football league, 18 and over. For any of you out there who maybe want to give it one last go, and it's a 10-game season in the springtime. It's starting in a few weeks here. Go to DunedinPirates.com for more information or email me, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com. Right now, I've played the past two seasons as a safety and special teams maven. I'm like Steve Tasker out there. I'm on all the special teams, kickoff return, punt return, field goal. I love special teams. Plus, I can get on the field that way. When you're a 38-year-old playing with 20-year-olds sometimes. But no, hey, if you're in your 20s or 30s, and don't think, oh, I'm too old, because believe me, if you've got a little bit of experience and you want to play again, check it out. I'll tell you right now, it's some of the most fun I've ever had. I've had more fun doing this than I did playing high school football when I was actually of an appropriate age to be playing. And I talked to Andy Villamarzo, a good friend of mine, and the team GM and owner, and also player, because in semi-pro you do all those things. And hey, we're looking for running backs and quarterbacks, okay? So, and not if you play any position, we're looking for you. Linemen are always needed, big guys, because they're hard to find. So if you want to get in there and thump a little bit and make some blocks or rush the passer, we need you. We need running backs. And if you're a quarterback, if you're an ex-high school guy, have a little experience, and you're thinking, hey, I want to get out there and play a little bit. I'm serious. I'm dead serious about this. Think about this. You can be playing quarterback for this team, okay? We got games mostly, you know, Dunedin's the home stadium at Dunedin High School. There's a couple other games in the area, like Bradenton and things like that. And then there's a couple of road trips. There's one to Daytona, one to South Florida, and one to Jacksonville. It's cool. It's really, it goes all the way through April, and then there's playoffs and everything. And there's one practice a week on Tuesday night. So check it out if you want to. Like I said, email me if you want to privately, and I'll get you hooked up, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, or go to DunedinPirates.com and check that out. That is our first free stretch of 2019. I'm excited for the playoffs. If there's any head coaching news, believe me, you need go no further than JoeBucksFan.com. They will all be there at all times, and the website's being refreshed constantly with news stories, seemingly on the minute. It's all there. Look no further. I want to thank the Joes for allowing me to do this show and get in front of you guys and putting me in front of this kind of an audience. It's an honor and a privilege every single week. I want to thank our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford, for taking care of us, and they can help put you in a new or certified pre-owned Ford today. Just check out the website, BillCurryFord.com. And of course, I want to thank all of you for listening, not just to this show, but all season long. It was a fun 2018, but that's over now. This show, and none of the Joe Bucks fan shows are, though, because we go year-round, and we've certainly got a lot going on with the head coaching hire and the draft coming up soon and all the things that come with the National Football League offseason. But not yet. It's Wild Card Weekend. Enjoy it. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.